Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Boy, one big box store kind of going after another big box store. Thanks for rejoining me here, Newsline PM, on this Friday afternoon. Thank you very much. Total Wine is a megastore just opened in Bellevue. And I know there are other locations in the area here that they're also looking at opening one of these stores. And it's just got, first of all, it's cheaper than Costco in some regards. Trisha Manning-Smith from Cuomo 4 News went and kind of did some price comparison. And for a bottle of Jack Daniels at Total Wine, it was $27.99, which was $5 less than Costco. I'm wondering, does that have all the taxes rolled in? That it has the liter tax, and so I'm wondering if that's the pre-tax price. But this store, this whole Total Wine thing, has got major selection. I don't know if I can get two shrink-wrapped boxes of cornflakes there. Edward Cooper is the Vice President of Public Affairs and Community Relations with Total Wine and More. Thanks for being here, Edward.
It's my pleasure, Ken.
So where is this? Where's Total Wine and More based?
We're based right outside of Washington, D.C. in Potomac, Maryland.
Oh, and we know that they know their booze back there.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Well, they know their booze back there.
There's no question about it.
So what drew you here? Obviously, the change of law that we had with Initiative 1183 caught your attention.
That's certainly one part of it, that when 1183 passed and the opportunity for us and obviously others to provide beer, wine, and spirits all in one box, then that was particularly enticing for us. But the locations that we're in now, in Bellevue, and the locations that we're going to are particularly attractive to us. They're good wine-buying place locations, and the demographics are terrific for us. So we're really excited about being there.
Where else are you looking at?
Well, we're going to open a store later on this fall in South Center, and then another store also this year, later this fall, in Spokane. And then we hope to be able to open as many as 10 stores within the next year and a half or so.
Well, if you're going to open up in Spokane, you better have lots of ripple. Have you ever been to Spokane?
I have been to Spokane.
I'm telling you, stock the ripple, man. You'll make a killing.
I don't know if we've got ripple. I don't believe so, but I can tell you we've got 13,500 different products, beer, wine, and spirits. And so there's something for everybody out there in Spokane.
Well, you know, as you were speaking, something occurred to me. Is this the first state that you've ever moved into that has kicked state liquor the state running the liquor out of the business?
Absolutely. And as you may well know, and as you alluded to there about kicking the state-run stores out, or at least what it is that the voters passed last year, other states, we know there are other states in the country, obviously, that are watching Washington State, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, a number of others out there that are watching closely with this experiment.
See, that's what I was hoping to glean. My hope was there as you were speaking. I'm thinking, God, maybe this guy can tell us how it all shakes out if you've opened stores in states that used to be controlled by the government and have now been taken over, put into the private entrepreneurial hands of people. Well, how did that work over time?
Over time, what happened is exactly what you alluded to in your opening there, and that is that competition is good and prices come down. And that's certainly what we've brought to the market in Bellevue and in greater Seattle, and what we'll bring to the market all throughout Washington State. And ultimately, I think it'll be the same thing in the other control states that are watching very closely and seeing how Washington, everything in Washington is going to shake out.
So
prices will get better.
When you come into an area, do you pay attention to private distillers and private breweries? And
absolutely. In fact, in our store in Bellevue, we carry 8,000 different types of wine. Of those, 1,400 plus are Washington State wines. So we are local in the communities in which we do business. We've got a couple of hundred of Washington State beers a number of them on our growler station and in our what we call the brewery district in our store. It's a big store. It's a big box, 30,000 square feet, and dozens, if not close to 60 or 70 Washington State distilled spirits.
Now, do you also sell, like accoutrements, bar glasses and stirrers and what are the things that you shake up and pour?
Absolutely. That's the and more part. So it's total wine, beer and spirits and more. And the and more is cigars and glasses and gifts and the like.
What do you call that thing that you pour when you're like mixing a martini and you shake it up?
It's a martini shaker.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're kind of a smartass, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, sure. You're not sorry. You were waiting to slip that one right in there.
You teed it up for me. I appreciate it.
Hey, it was a martini shaker. But that's pretty. So, like you sell shot glasses and.
Yeah, there's primarily we see ourselves obviously as a fine wine store. We most of what we sell is fine wine. It's a good percentage of that, over 60% of our sales. So wine glasses, decanters, ways to open the bottle, corkscrews, and the like. So we are a superstore, but we've got a bunch of high end products as well.
So here, I'll toss you a soft one, but I want to see if you can be really candid with me. Seriously,
sure.
are expensive champagnes really worth it? I mean, when you're talking about what does a bottle of Cristal sell for?
Off the top of my head, I don't know what a bottle of Cristal sells for. But, for us, it's all about consumers and the customer. If the customer comes in and wants it and the price is attractively priced, then it's worth it to them.
Because I know that the comparison that Tricia Manning Smith did, she had Dom Perignon at $130 a bottle.
Right.
I could win the lottery every week for the next 6 months, and I can't see myself buying a bottle of champagne for $129.
Yeah. Well, you and me both. My taste tend to run elsewhere other than champagne. But for those who do like champagne. And a wide variety of champagne and sparkling wines. We've got probably close to 100 of them.
Wow! I remember my mom, God rest her soul, who used to say she used to tell me she said you have champagne taste with a beer pocketbook, and it is held true. So $27.99 for a bottle of Jack, is that before tax?
That's all in.
Oh, okay. So the prices that you see there reflect what you'll pay at the register.
That's correct.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Edward Cooper, he's the VP of Public Affairs and Community Relations for Total Wine and More. Thank you. I enjoyed talking with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
All right. You take care.
You too.
It's a martini shaker. See, the only thing he didn't add at the end that was implicit because he just had that pause, it was really, here's what I heard. It's a martini shaker. You idiot. I get to tend the rabbits, George. I get to tend the rabbits.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So this Ferris wheel, the Great Wheel, down on, where is it, Pier 40? No, 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 no. Anyway, Pier 57, excuse me. Built on Pier 57. I think it opens this afternoon, somewhere around 5 o'clock or something. And I tell you, I think this is going to be a big hit. I think people in the area here are really going to enjoy this. It's 175 feet tall, which is, what, about a third, maybe a little less than the height of the Space Needle. But it goes out over the pier. So at its highest point, it's about 200 feet above the water because it extends out over Puget Sound because of the pier there. I'm not knocking it, but I'm saying what they've got are 42 climate-controlled gondolas. Now, I realize that it rains a lot here and, yada, yada, yada. But I would have hoped that there would have been at least a couple of open-air gondolas. just so that you can really experience, you know, get that saltwater smell off the sound and everything, and just experience the wind and, you know, hear the seagulls below you and all of that. But instead, all of these will be enclosed gondolas that are climate controlled. So they'll be heated during the winter. They'll be air conditioned during the summer. The one thing that I think is way cool, I got to see if I'm going to be able to do this. The one thing that I do think is cool is they have a VIP gondola, which will have leather seats. And I don't care about that. But it has a glass floor. Now, I will fully admit here that I get a little trepidatious with heights, right? And particularly the illusion. Now, I've been in the – have you been down in Chicago? They have these – in the Sears Tower. They have these abutments that come out, and you can walk out, and it's all glass. So you walk out in these things, and they're like, oh, maybe 8 feet by 6 feet. And it's a glass floor and all glass sides. And I was able to go out there for about 3.5 seconds before I scooted back in because I was just, you know, on the verge of peeing my pants. I mean, you get this sensation. You look down, and there's nothing between you and the ground. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. You know, so they have one of these gondolas with a glass floor in the Ferris wheel. Hey, Jen, look who's here. My friend Jen.
Hi, Ken.
You want to turn the mic on? We have to have a mic around here.
Isn't it? I think it's on.
Jen Pirak is just, she's masterful. She's
You're so nice.
No, I'm not. She's a wizard. The things that she is capable of doing, absolutely astounding. But that's not why you're here.
No, I want to talk about the Seattle Great Wheel.
You went and rode on this thing.
I went this morning, and I took a couple rotations around in two different gondolas. First, the regular gondola.
Yeah.
There's 41 of those, and then there's one VIP gondola.
Oh, so you went in that?
I did go in it.
Is it freaky or not?
Well, I mean, for someone like you, it might be freaky, but for me,
yeah.
I loved it.
Oh, yeah, fine. Fine.
No, you know what? It's really not
Shram,
bad.
You're such a girly girl.
You know, it was very comfortable. If you're on a romantic date, you can't put a price on romance, as you know, Ken, right?
No, you can.
You cannot do that. Anyway, instead of the benches that the regular gondolas have, these have four leather bucket seats, two on each side. They have a TV in there.
Time out. Hold it.
Okay. Yes.
Time out.
All right.
What the hell is a TV doing in there?
You know, I really didn't understand that myself.
Makes no damn sense.
Well, it's just one of those, like, making it luxury in, like, a limousine.
No. You're paying money to fly around in the air above Seattle.
Maybe it's to play a
romantic Judge Judy.
It's not TV. You put in a DVD, so maybe you customize the DVD for your date. I don't know. And then there's the glass
floor. Well, if it's
floor.
A romantic date, you know, you could put some porn in there or something.
Okay. Let's go back to the glass floor.
All right.
It has a glass floor. You can look down.
That didn't freak you out?
No. I mean, you know, if I am not enclosed in something and looking down, I get a little freaked out. But this did not scare me. It didn't. It was very comfortable. You're totally enclosed. They're temperature-controlled, climate-controlled gondolas, so you can, if you're cold or...
See, that was the other thing that I don't mind the enclosed gondolas, but mm-hmm. they should have left at least a few open to the environment.
You know, I will say that Corwin Hake was there, one of the reporters here at Como News Radio, and he said the same thing. He goes, I kind of wanted to feel that air on my...
Yeah.
Smell the Puget Sound, but there it definitely is none of that. And I'll tell you something I found out when I was there, because they didn't have it working. They said, we're going to launch this, and then there's lights on the wheel, and then they can do a light show. So they have customized light shows that they're going to eventually do with this whole wheel.
Cool.
Oh, totally cool. And then he said, we can even do a smiley face on the wheel. love that.
Now, the gondola you were in, do these things like rock?
No, they do not rock.
Oh, man.
It's a beautiful ride. And if you hit if you hit it at sunset, gosh, what a romantic date.
Well, you'd miss the sunset because you were watching TV.
No, I would not be watching TV. It's just something that everyone should experience because it's a cool thing that's here in Seattle. It's $13 for adults, $8.50 for kids, 11 and under. And
going to pay $8.50 for a kid who's going to sit there and go,
up, put on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Listen, there's only one VIP part. You don't pay for that when you just go in the regular.
They need
the
to take the damn TV out of the gondola.
Ken, go experience it. You'll have a lot of fun.
They need to take the TV out of the gondola. That's absurd.
Go experience the Seattle Great Wheelie. It's worth your money
and your time. Fine. I'm too scared to ride in the glass bottom boat.
I love you, Ken. I love you.
Thanks, Jen. Hang with us. Newsline PM goes on.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Now, this would be fun. If you can find your way to a place called Kasota, Minnesota, there's a business there called Drive a Tank. And what you do is you have the chance to drive some of this surplus military gear around in this old limestone quarry. You get to roll over junk cars and smash. I don't think they let you shoot the cannon. Probably don't let you shoot the cannon. But they do let you smash these junk cars. This sounds like it would be incredible. You can take a turn under the turret, flatten the car. I mean, they have these junker cars that are pretty much intact. So there's still the glass and everything. So you drive the tank over these cars. You can hear the glass crunching and exploding. And it's about, let's see, where is it? It's 50 miles southwest of Minneapolis. So actually, that's a pretty good, that's not a bad distance if you're ever out there. Lots of noise, lots of vibration. It's very hot inside the tank, they said, even during the wintertime. Wait a minute. Drivers who want to smash a car have to pay an additional $549. If you want to drive a tank through a trailer home, that'll cost you $3,500. Man, this ain't cheap. This is not cheap. Speaking of driving tanks, maybe that's what we ought to do with elderly drivers. In a moment, we're going to come back and talk about this 80-year-old woman that drove into the bay over near Poulsbo.
Mm-hmm. Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Well, you know, I've gotten, it must be 4 or 5 emails from Nancy Pelosi. Probably about the same number from the Tea Party. But now, I've stepped up in the world now, man. Here's what it says. Ken. Yesterday, that's what it said. Ken. Not hi, Ken. Just Ken. Yesterday, I shared an emotional moment with Barack in the Oval Office after he learned healthcare reform had been upheld. Barack Obama is a man who refused to give up. Tomorrow is the biggest fundraising deadline of the election. Romney and the Republicans, yada, yada, yada. They can't beat us if we pull together. Our grassroots movements is unstoppable. Please donate $3 or more today before the critical deadline. Thanks. Signed, Joe. Not Vice President Joe Biden, just Joe. You know, they got to think, I'm telling you, the Tea Party, I don't care which side of the aisle, I'm still going to contribute to Barack Obama's campaign. I'm still going to vote for him. But I'm tired of them thinking I'm such a dope that I'm getting email from the Vice President or Nancy Pelosi. What can I do? There was an 80-year-old woman last week. Just yesterday, drove her car into Liberty Bay near Poulsbo. She wasn't hurt, but she wasn't able to make it up the embankment, so a special chair had to be used to get her up. The woman told medics she was uninjured. Cause of the crash is unknown. I don't think it's unknown. She's old. She's 80 years old, and she drove her car into the bay. This discussion of elderly drivers, I think, is so long overdue. I honestly do. Russ Rader is the senior vice president and media director of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. Hi, Russ.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I appreciate your being here. So, here's some of the information that I've gotten. That at around the age of 65, elderly drivers, as they hit that age, are at an increased risk of being involved in a crash. And by the time they get to 75, they're really vulnerable. They have poor judgment in making left-hand turns, drifting in the traffic lane, and not quite the same ability that they used to have when something happens. In other words, their reaction time is really slowed down. Do you see this in terms of what's reflected, you know, nationally? Are elderly people more accident prone?
Well, what you've said is all true. Crash rates based on the miles driven do start to go up for older drivers, particularly after age 75. But there is a flip side to the coin, which is that older drivers don't drive as much as people who are, say, 35 to 55. And they aren't getting into the same kinds of crashes. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety thought that at the beginning of the last decade, that is the early part of the 2000s, we thought we were going to begin to have an increasing problem with older driver crashes as the number of baby boomers getting into that age group increased, the number of licensed drivers who are 70 and older increased, but it actually didn't happen. We haven't seen a big spike in older driver crashes. In fact, it's going the opposite direction.
Well, one of the things, and I really tried to get some information on this because everything that I have is otherwise anecdotal. Is there any statistical information that would give us insight into whether or not, if they're not getting involved in more crashes, are they causing more crashes? Because I got to tell you, some of the elderly people that I run into on the road, they cause people to do really strange and dangerous things sometimes. People get impatient.
The older driver crash risk is an issue. I mean, they are getting into they do have higher crash rates based on how much they drive, and they have higher insurance claims for crashes. They're more likely to be at fault in their crashes. But there is this myth that they are somehow a big risk to other people out on the road, and we just don't see that. Based on their population out there, older drivers are injuring fewer road users, other people in other vehicles or pedestrians or bicyclists, than, say, 30-year-olds. So it's not an issue of them being a big risk to others, but they do tend to be a risk to themselves. That is, when they crash, because they're more fragile, they're more likely to be injured in the crashes that they have.
Okay, but here's what I was asking, though, and I'll give you an example. You're getting on the freeway, and you have an elderly driver in front of you who's, you know, getting ready to merge on the freeway at the accelerated speed of 27 miles an hour. And so what happens is you've got behind that elderly driver, you know, there's maybe 8 or 9 cars that are going crazy trying to get on the freeway, and it's a ridiculously low speed. And so then what you witness is that, you know, say I'm directly behind the elderly driver. The driver behind me cuts off to my left and, you know, over that V line that you're not supposed to drive through. The driver behind him is going to do the same thing. And then what happens is they get into that lane and they can't quite merge into the lane over next to them. And so now the elderly driver slows down even more because they've pulled into the lane in front of him or her. I'm slowing down because the elderly driver has slowed down. Everybody's getting impatient, and an accident results from their stupidity. Meanwhile, the elderly driver putts away at, you know, 42 miles an hour, is not involved in an accident, but has at some level helped to create the accident that occurred.
Well, there's no question that things like that happen, and there's no question that it's annoying, but we don't see that the older driver crash problem is increasing. In fact, it's actually decreasing, partly because being 75 today, for example, isn't the same as it was 25 years ago. People are in better health today than they used to be. But the situation you described, there's no question that that kind of thing happens, that it's annoying. But think about a more dire situation that often happens with younger drivers. If you compare how older drivers behave behind the wheel compared to younger ones, you get a real stark contrast, because older drivers don't text and drive. They're not driving around distracted. They're not typically drinking and driving. They're not driving around at night. They're not speeding. And so elderly drivers actually represent less of a hazard than younger drivers do.
So my question is, do you think that there should be, because there are requirements when you're getting your license when you're young,
yep.
should there be mandatory driving tests at a certain age once you hit 65, 70, 75, whatever it is?
Well, there are states that are trying different kinds of things to try to see if they can weed out the problem driver, the driver who is clearly impaired in some way and who may be more likely to crash. But so far, we don't really know whether there is a test, per se, that can identify that problem driver. Older drivers tend to self-regulate. They tend to cut back on their driving over time, recognizing their own impairments. So we don't really have a test at this point that shows, okay, here's something we can implement that could help us weed out that problem driver.
Okay. Russ Rader, Senior Vice President, Media Director with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Thank you very much. I appreciate the insight. Good talking with you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ken.
All right. I've told my kids, if I get to a point and you think I'm not supposed to be on the road, take my car keys, throw them in the toilet, and flush them. But I am an advocate. I believe that when you go to renew your license after 75, you should be required to take another driving test. 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. Am I crazy for suggesting that?
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Should elderly drivers at a particular age, when they have to have their driver's license renewed, should it be required that they take a driver's test? They don't go down to the Department of Licensing, stick their face up against the little thing and say red, green, blue, green, or whatever it is that's there. But they actually have to physically go out and prove that they're still capable of driving a car. And one of the reasons I bring this up, in addition to the example that I used with this 80-year-old woman who drove her car into the bay near Poulsbo, you have a study by Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and joined by the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, found that from ages 75 to 84, the rate of deaths go up. And it's equal to about the death rate of teenage drivers. And once the driver hits 85, the fatality rate skyrockets to about four times that of teenagers. So I'm just saying, you know, we have restrictions on age in terms of how young you or how old you have to be to get a license. I think we should look at how old you can be and still continue to drive. And this is a dilemma for families, you know. This is something that's really hard, you know, when the kids see mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, and they're going, man, they're going to kill somebody or they're going to kill themselves. And getting the elderly to take up or to take responsibility for that is really difficult. So I say give them the test. I don't say take them off the road. I just say give them the test. 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. Let's get out here to Janelle in North Bend. You're up on Newsline PM.
Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing fine, thank you.
You know, my dad is going to be 87 next month, and it's a huge issue in our family. And, you know, it's the near misses that we can't quantify, you know, and that's the problem. They pull out in front of people. They just don't have the same, you know, reflexes and depth perception, you know, when they're older.
And how long is his license good for right now, Janelle?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to snoop in his wallet. But my sister has been trying to get him off the road in the evening. You know, it's a pride thing, especially with a guy. The men, you know, it's a control thing. And,
oh, yeah. You know, look, guys are, you know, we're stubborn. We're egocentric. And we figure we're always going to be capable of doing whatever we want to do. But when you go to his wallet, would you find me a 10?
You bet.
Yeah, send me a 10 spot.
Yeah.
Thanks.
If I can come off the road, I'll send you 50.
All right. Thanks, Janelle.
Bye.
You take care. 206-421-1000. Brenda, Mercer Island, you're up.
Hi, Ken. My father had COPD and was on oxygen, and he would not quit driving. And when I was back taking care of him, one day he got the car and drove it to the front of the house, and I had to stand outside the door, and he kept saying, I'll drive, and he won't. And I had to stand there for about 10 minutes and finally got out and let me drive.
How old was he?
82. And finally he hit the light pole out in front of the house, and that's when he quit driving. He had a coughing spell. His oxygen was during his COPD well enough at the time. They needed to up it, and he hit the light pole. And then my uncle went in. He had COPD also, was on oxygen. They're both heavy smokers. And he couldn't read the eye chart well enough. And I mean, he had really thick glasses, and he's hauling his oxygen tank on a wheel thing. And the guy goes, "Don't you mean a D, Mr. Denning?"
Oh,
and he
man.
He goes, "Oh, yeah, D." And I'm just like, "You got to be kidding me."
I thank you, Brenda. And you know, here's the deal. Thanks, Brenda. I'm not trying to diss the elderly. I'm really not. I'm just saying from a pragmatic point of view, because you just heard from two people who had a very difficult time convincing their elderly parents that, you know, maybe you ought to consider giving up driving. Why put that burden on the family? At a certain age, when you go in to have your license, I can't believe that an 85-year-old man or woman can walk into a Washington State licensing office and stick their face up there and tell them what colors they're looking at and what letters there are, and will walk out with a driver's license that is good for 5 years. I mean, they're saying, yeah, you can continue to drive up until you're 90, and then you can go back and tell us what letters you see, and we'll give you one for another 5 years. There should be more to it, period. Cheryl in Lakewood, you're up on Newsline PM.
I am 55 years old. I'm a cab driver, and let me tell you, in about 10 years, I need to be off the road. come on. There's a limit. Let my kids take me now.
See, I would agree. Yeah, for all the years we hauled them around, it's time for them to haul us around. Yeah.
Amen. My kids do it, too.
All right. Thanks, Cheryl. I think that's what it – and look, individually – I think that, you know, ideally, I think this should be done at 75. Unless there is some physical impairment or something is really terribly wrong, I think the mandatory, you know, when you go to renew your license, that should begin at 75. And I think they should only renew that license for like 3 years or 2 years. And after you hit 80, I think you ought to have to go in every year. I really do. I know the elderly are just going to get all ticked off at me, and like I say, I'm not trying to dish you. I'm not trying to be snotty or smart alecky. I just think it's for the elderly's good. It's for my grandma and grandpa, and it's for the safety of my grandchild. You know, that's the way it comes out. So we'll see what happens. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon because none of the politicians want to rile the blue hairs.